Coming up on show 1062, we talk to the secret CEO of the juggernaut that is the Fully Charged Show. Earlier this week, I caught up with Dan Caesar. We call him the secret CEO of the Fully Charged Show. And, well, Robert Llewellyn is the founder and the face of Fully Charged. And for many people, one of the reasons that they got into EVs, it was for me. Still driving diesel, watching this great YouTube channel that was, you know, probably less than 100,000, less than 50,000 subscribers. And Robert largely shooting and editing on his own. Then he took some people on as well and started to make some really beautiful videos as well. But we call Dan the secret CEO because he doesn't spend any time in front of the camera, but he has grown it and filled in those gaps that, well, we all know and love Robert Llewellyn on screen and doing the bits that he needed some extra support with, which is building the business and putting all those things in place to make it into a YouTube channel that's approaching a million subscribers, a big video audio business as well, live events business as well, bringing together events for both consumers and industry as well, and not just focusing on electric cars, but of course renewables and green energy, and just so much going on with that, and so many faces on screen as well now with Robert sharing the limelight as that just grows, the beast that grows to be ever bigger. Let's have a chat to Dan, find out about what he does there, and whether by the end of it maybe he won't be the not quite so secret CEO. Oh, by the way, I did this live stream with my buddy Nick Ramo, who is EV Nick on YouTube. If that's the other voice that you hear, check out his YouTube channel and enjoy your Saturday special this week. Welcome along. It's a little thing that Nick and I are doing these days, talking to the best and the brightest names in energy and clean transport. Not found any of them yet, but in the meantime, we've got some great guests lined up. And one of those, we titled this show The Secret CEO of Fully Charged, the Dan behind the show. And we had loads of people say, but everyone knows who Dan is. So I guess we should say, if you know what Fully Charged is, you probably know something about Dan, you've met him or shook his hand at an event, or and if you don't know what Fully Charged is, we're not going to explain it, so go away and have a look on YouTube. There's just one or two videos you might want to watch. Dan, welcome to the show this evening.
Thanks, guys. It's great to be here.
So we wanted to get you on to talk about how this beast of an organization has grown from a one-man band, a man and a camera and a tripod, into something that is, you know, influencing governments and opinion and consumers. So thank you for coming on. Is that fair to start off by calling you a secret CEO? Do you shun being in front of the camera?
The last 5 years, I think I've been sort of had a low profile, and it suited me quite nicely. In previous roles, loads of stuff I've done, I've actually been the front man. But the last couple of roles I've done, I've been like back up to the CEO, and you know, Robert's such a great personality. When I came into the business, there was just no need for me to do any of that front-facing stuff. So for me, it was kind of actually better to focus on building the bit behind the scenes. And so we've been very, very, very quiet on that front. But you know, now a lot of questions we get are, well, what goes on behind the scenes? You know, we know it's Robert, we know about the presenters, but now how does it all work, and how do you kind of piece it together? And I spoke to Nick a bit earlier this afternoon, and I forget quite how big a deal it is in terms of the audience size. I completely forget, because you'll know, if you're running channels, you just focus on the channel day in, day out. I'm not saying I never get out of the house, but you know, it is, you know, it's a real tunnel vision approach you take. And without the live show feedback, where you actually get to see people face to face, you forget the impact that Robert and the channel has had over recent years.
Of course, the live stuff has been a big deal for Fully Charged since you came on board. I think I've done a fair amount of work in live, but in the music industry, and I think there are two oh heck moments. The first one is when you sign a contract because you know it's not sale or return. You know, venues don't say, hey, if no one shows up, don't bother paying us. So the first one is when you sign all the contracts because all the money's gone out. And then the second oh heck moment is sometime when the event is on and you just take a breath and look around and it's just all working and you go, oh wow, we pulled this off. That's pretty cool. Is that kind of fair how to say how you view the fully charged events, both the thrill and scary?
Funnily enough, I've become a bit immune to the scary side because I've done a lot of events over the years. So when I first started working with Robert, I said, actually, you know, YouTube doesn't pay the bills, and that's not a cry for help. That's just a reality. So you do have to look at other ways you can do stuff. And I said to Robert that you can't really be static as a business. You know, Fully Charged can either grow or not, you know, and actually other people will breeze past you. It's great that you're kind of number one, and you've got this amazing thing that is actually helping consumers understand clean energy and electric vehicles. It would be a great shame to not take the opportunity. So the first thing I said to him, look, I think we can probably take the Fully Charged to the next level by doing a live event. And he was, you know, brilliant with me. He was like, I don't think it can work. You know, he's very humble. I don't think anyone will come and watch me. It will be tumbleweed. And I said, look, it won't be. You've got a great audience already. They're super passionate. You know, I've done stuff from scratch and got decent audience. And when we opened the first one, it was a huge success. The second one was much bigger still. And then we did a live show in Texas before the world changed as well, which is also very successful. So we're very, very fortunate. You know, most events, they worry about the marketing. With Fully Charged, we do. We're not saying we're glib about it, but, you know, people love what the channel are doing and want to be there. And it's a real community, and I hope that stays that way. You know, we've got, I know you guys pretty well, and loads of other people from the industry who make it great. So it feels like it's a real coming together. So that's why we've really, really missed that feedback. Digital feedback, as you know, is totally different. Relying on the comments section of YouTube does not necessarily give you the best barometer of where you are.
No, it's weird that, isn't it? It's funny how you can see people just seem to be able to have no filter on the internet, especially in the comment section on YouTube. My first memory was actually meeting you at Fully Charged Live. Okay. First event, was it 2019
or 2018? The time is now very relative. Concept. Yeah, it was 2018. Yeah,
yeah. So the 2018, and I remember sitting upstairs in the sort of like press area, sat there, and I just heard two car bosses having a talk from a PR company. I won't mention the car company involved, but one of them went, "We dropped the ball here, not being involved with this. We definitely need to get involved for next year." Did you expect 2019 to blow up, you know, to the size and popularity? Because it was mental.
We did. I don't know if either of you came to the launch. We went to the Electric Vehicle Experience Center at the back end of 2017 and announced that we were doing the show. I guess both of you might have even been there. I don't know. And we got great support. Loads of people came along, and that was great. And we pitched the idea, and people were really supportive, and a couple of companies in particular enabled us to get going, which was great. But it really, for some people, they got it and, you know, they understood it. And for other people, until they saw it, they couldn't get it. So there were plenty of companies that came and went, oh no, we should have been here. And I remember we did the UK one, and then we went out to Texas and we pitched it to the Texans. And Robert and I were in a room of 100 people pitching it, and we were like Martians, you know, trying to explain the concept of the channel, you know, electric vehicles. We had to start from way back, you know, to really explain it. And the fact that sold out on the Saturday, at least last year, was just unbelievable, you know, given the circumstances. So, it's really, I stand on the shoulders of Robert. You know, it wouldn't have happened without Robert building this audience, pouring his own money into it for many years. But we miss the live stuff because that contact, you know, getting that feedback. And, you know, we don't always want positive stuff. Actually, we love the constructive stuff too. But we do miss just seeing people. You know, it is a great show.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the 2020 show was originally supposed to be Silverstone. And then we moved to Folkestone, and we'll get onto obviously onto Farnborough. So we moved from Silverstone. We got onto, because Folkestone is Silverstone. My fault. So we moved from Silverstone Folkestone to Farnborough, and obviously we'll move on to obviously COVID and why that's cancelled. Yeah. Obviously, you did a bit of a Jeremy Clarkson here in your move of location, didn't you?
Did we? Is that well? It was interesting. We loved using Silverstone. And it was a great place to launch those shows. But we quickly sold it out, really. That was the problem. And then we had a big decision to make about where we took the show next. And that was quite tricky, actually, because the UK venue scene, if you know it well, we're not blessed with the best venues. I mean, XL's fantastic, but it's on the wrong side of London, some might argue. You've got Olympia, which is obviously kind of landlocked. Then you've got NEC, which is good, but probably a bit tired, if I may say so. And we also didn't want necessarily just to go south, you know. So from our point of view, it was a really tricky decision. But we were planning to do Fully Charged Live South, if you like, and then to follow up with a northern version as well this year. But obviously, that's all we've lost. You know, we've lost 18 months worth of progress. But you know, thankfully, we're all still here, and that's the main thing.
Yeah, I thought it was one of those with Silverstone. One of those really interesting things that you know, when I'm not doing this, I make podcasts for. Lots of different motorsport, from Extreme E to Formula E. But I also make the Formula One podcasts as well, because I like motor racing, and I don't in the future I don't have any problem with burning some stuff, or whether it's synthetic fuels or whatever, just for 1% of the time, or classic cars, keeping them on the road. If you don't want to convert them to electric, keep them running in the way they were made. So I'm not gonna ring the bell for turning off oil tomorrow. We just got to get most of the job done. And so I loved it, because there was also these cars belting around the circuit. And I was like, oh, brilliant. F3 cars or something. But it was this kind of weird disconnection between what was happening indoors and then these loud petrol cars going around outside. And it was just a really small point, but I was like, yeah, you could kind of do with a venue that's not centered around this kind of petrol head world. But so we're all disappointed about it.
So you moved to an airport.
Yeah, exactly.
They just happened to be literally outside your house.
It's quite close. It is quite close. I mean, from our perspective, we love getting toe to toe and meeting the audience. And the reality is we see ourselves having lots of different events. You know, you could see the kind of trajectory with Texas. I mean, that was probably braver than doing the UK event in a way, because, you know, we're known, we have a UK audience and we're based here. But now we're going to take on Amsterdam. We're going to do Sydney as well. And, you know, from our perspective, I really want to do a northern event, you know.
Yeah.
I am southern, but I have spent enough time. I went to Lancaster, spent a long time up there and love that part of the world. So I really, really want to do something in the north of England, want to do something in the Midlands, want to do something in Scotland. So it could be quite peripatetic, but sometimes when you look at the list of venues, you're actually surprised at the paucity of what's on offer. And also, what's available. A lot of people go, well, could you do this? And you go, well, it's not like that. If you ring up an event venue and say, we've got this show, and they go, yeah, but that conflicts with something we've already got, and there needs to be some space between what you do and that. So, from our perspective, Farnborough was the beginning of something, but we have very much hoped that in September, when the show's outside, that people join us from all across the country. But our plan would be to definitely do one further north as well in future years. It's just a shame that obviously we've kind of lost that period of time.
Yeah, I mean, so obviously, I, the first part I ever heard about you coming to join Fully Charged was being involved in the live shows.
Yeah.
So how did the coming together of you and Robert happen? How did you meet? How did you bump into each other? Was it by chance?
Well, I paid him money to meet him.
Okay.
Let me explain that. So basically, I'd been in clean energy since about 2004. So I was, you know, I'd more than drunk the Kool-Aid. I'd been promoting renewables for a long, long time. I used to have a business called the Renewables Roadshow. I consulted for the government, for Department of Energy and Climate Change. I'd launched the Renewable Heat Incentive with them. I'd launched Energy Saving Home stuff. I'd worked with Wolseley Plum Centre. I was Director of Communications at Corgi, for anyone who knows the gas safety watchdog. So I was absolutely steeped in home energy and incredibly passionate about it. I've been talking about solar panels and heat pumps for much longer than I care to remember. And I was just setting something up called Accelerating Clean Technologies. And it was a launch event at the Science Museum. And I paid Robert to come and host that. And that's how we met. And the idea behind that was sort of hastening the energy transition, if you like. And we just met and sort of got on. And I said to him, well, how do you make money out of YouTube? I had no idea at that point. This is 5 years ago, and he said, I don't. And then I said, well, you know, I was working for a fuel cell company at the time. I said, I'll happily help you for free for a while. And that's what I did for well over a year, just helped him for free. And then the live event really was the transition point at which I came into the business. So I'm quite known for that, but I don't really, you know, I do much more than that. So from my perspective, it was incredible to meet Robert. I just didn't think much of it at the time, really. I tell you this now, no one's watching, right, that I really didn't know much about Red Dwarf. I didn't watch Scrap Heap. So I really just saw Robert as Fully Charged. And I'd spent so much time in the industry, in all these talking shops where, you know, the business events where people kind of convince themselves that, you know, renewables are the right way forward or electric cars are the right way forward. And they're all trying to convince themselves, but not talking to the public. And that's what I found so amazing about Fully Charged. You can actually attract normal people to EVs, to clean energy. And I thought that was something that was sorely missing. And so I sort of volunteered my help to Robert at that point. And yeah, it's been an incredible, incredible few years, really.
So what state, and I don't mean that in a bad state, but what was the state of the business? If it was, we say Robert was putting his own money in and does put his own money into to his passion, and it wasn't a profitable business, as so many, I guess, accidental entrepreneurs find themselves in that situation. They make a thing and then lots of people love it, and they didn't ever go into it with either a business plan or an exit plan. So at what state did you join, and then kind of what were your short and medium and long-term goals when you came in?
Well, I hope I nail this interview. Am I going to get this job? Let's see. Okay, well, so, I mean, when I came in, it was really interesting in that, you know, Robert and I are very similar politically, our views on energy, our views on electric vehicles, you know, but I'm kind of, I would say, a born organizer. And I think Robert would be the first to say he isn't, you know, so he would say that. And he said on many times, Fully Charged Live would have been a tent in a field if it had been that up to him. So, and he's, you know, he's very humble about that. So for me, when I came in, it was a case of, well, looking inside YouTube, you get revenue from YouTube, and then you have, probably most people know, we have patrons who really kept the lights on for the channel for many years. And then beyond that, nothing. And how do you scale that up? What do you do to do that? So live events was the kind of the first port of call. That was going incredibly well. The live show comes back outside in September, and it's, you know, suddenly tickets are selling heavily again. You know, everyone's sort of piling back in again for September, which is wonderful. But in the last year, I've had to be pretty ingenious about saying, well, how do we keep the lights on, really? Mm. And it's that simple. I mean, the reality is we have about 25 people associated with the business now, many of whom are part-time, so presenters and part-timers and a handful of us are full-time. But once you get to that point, you need to kind of look at other options. So you've seen us do things like electric driving in the last year, EV World Cup. We did a premiere on the channel. We've really gone to town on our second channel, Fully Charged Plus. And we're actually in a really good position now. But I had to, we had to be pretty fleet of foot. But it's great because Robert and I can make a decision pretty instantaneously. So we're very fortunate in that regard. There's no, you know, boardroom table to kind of take a great idea and water it down to the point at which you think it's not a good idea anymore. So we've been very fortunate. And but when I came in, it was certainly the event was the kind of the starting point, because it proves that the audience will travel. And it shows, when we did the America event, it shows that we could do it in multiple different locations. And that was a real light bulb moment for people thinking, well, this channel is quite interesting. We have people driving from Canada to Texas in electric vehicles just to come to Fully Charged Live Texas. So when you see that, you think, well, Robert's really created something incredible if people are treating it as a bit of a mecca, an EV mecca. So it's been, you know, been incredible, but yeah, we're very fortunate that we can be agile, because the last year has been anything but fun, I think, commercially for probably 99% of the people who are listening to this.
Yeah. I mean, you've actually raised a really interesting point there. Obviously you've got the numbers of staff that you employ, presenters, all the people don't see behind the scenes like yourself, you know, deals with the running of the channel. And you've also got the editors, cameramen, you know, people who are in charge of all that there is a hell of a lot of production costs in a YouTube channel that people don't see. I mean, it's hard enough for me on a small scale, but I mean, doubling up to your scale with presenters, cameramen, getting it to the quality of TV that you do is very hard. Which brings me on to the question that obviously you stay at the start of the show, or you're used to still, I believe you still are, 100% independent. So how do you balance this with receiving money from the live shows and doing these sponsored events with Polestar? I mean, how do you balance that? Because I've got to admit, that's a hard scale.
It's really, really tough. It's really, really tough. I mean, there has been, I'm very proud to say, at no point has there ever been a conversation with Robert to say, you know, you're reviewing X car, you know, go easy on it. You know, that just doesn't happen. In fact, we have a commercial director and he's not allowed anywhere near the creative process. Nice guy that he is, you know, he's not even really allowed to talk to Robert, you know, at all. So, you know, from our perspective, you know, there has to be this separation of church and state. And I think that it's very difficult. You know, we would produce something and we would review something, and there's always going to be people say, oh, you love Tesla, you hate Tesla, you know, you went soft on that, you went hard on that. And the reality is that no one is pulling our strings. We do have to do commercial things. We, particularly in the last year, we've had to be quite, you know, innovative, I think. But from my perspective, you know, at no point do we kind of say to Robert or any of the other presenters, you know, we want this to be favorable or anything like that. Do people believe me? I care, but I don't, you know, I know that's true. So I can't kind of care too much. That's the reality of the situation. But remaining independent is absolutely key. There's been a thing going on this week. I don't know if you've heard about European Super League. If you're not a football fan, then you won't have heard about this, but most people will have. You know, it's very easy for beautiful things to be corrupted by money. But yeah, what I can say hand on heart is that Robert and I are about the mission. We're not, I really don't mind upsetting car companies, and I've upset plenty, you know. Yeah, so it's the mission for us.
A certain two-letter Chinese car that Robert couldn't reach the charging socket on. It was always one I remember of how, you know, how he was just completely honest about how it didn't really work the way he wanted it to. If it wasn't for the commercial money that you've had from obviously the Polestar stuff and like that,
yeah,
fully charged, would it still exist this year? Would it have gone under?
Well, that's a really okay. So I'll be completely honest. I mean, I think the reality is it would still be here, but we would have had to let a lot of people go.
Yeah, That's the thing.
So, we're like a little family, and so for me personally, when we got to the crunch time last spring, I said to Robert, you know, I want to keep everyone employed, you know, I want to keep everyone on board, and we're going to have to, you know, we're going to have to be inventive. I don't want to let anyone go through that process. And we've managed to succeed broadly in that. So for us, I think most people get it. I think most people are pragmatic, but there's the odd person who thinks, well, you know, are you going to sell your soul? Are you going to do that? You know, all I can do is assure you that because we're about the mission, we're not about the money. I really couldn't care less about the money, you know, for frankly, survival. The mission and getting more people to ditch fossil fuel cars, whether it's for a bike or for a scooter or for a car or for car sharing or for public transport or to switch energy provider, whatever it may be, or maybe to, I think you had Sarah Merrick on Ripple recently, or, you know, all these great companies. That's the thing that gives us great, great pleasure.
Yeah, I think, you know, with a YouTube channel, so many of them could disappear and you'd go, oh, that's a shame. Right, what's next? You know what I mean? It wouldn't, you'd be like, oh, that person's not going to do their YouTube channel anymore. And it goes, it says a lot that actually, if we woke up tomorrow morning and Robert said, oh, we're stopping fully charged, it'd be an outcry. Because you can't stop now. You've just got to an inflection point. And that says a lot about the mission and the cause behind it as well. I'm really curious about how that it's grown, because... And actually how you balance it as well, because it started off one person making videos. You introduced, you had a lot of fantastic guests, but then with Johnny, you introduced a second permanent presenter, which I must admit, I knew Johnny from telly and not so much from writing. I was kind of into car mags, but not the stuff that he would write. So I knew of him, but I was like, oh, who's this guy? I don't want this. Like, I just want Robert. And then you watch the first video and you're like, oh, okay. He's, you know, he knows a lot about EVs and yeah. he's a really sound guy. So, okay, that's fine. But my, I'll be honest, my initial reaction was, I want Robert. Like, I don't want this. So that was the first, you know, couple of videos. Then you got used to it. And then you've got, I said to you earlier, you got sort of six odd people now, certainly on your, on the website where you profile them. And you said, well, actually a bit more, but it's been a, you know, a funny old time with COVID. We'll tell you more. How do you go from something that is essentially based around one person to being a team thing whilst not losing the fact that it came from Robert? That's a, I think that's a tightrope.
It is. I mean, I think everything, I think a tightrope is pretty much where we've been living, you know, commercially, integrity. Well, I mean, you know, we're still here.
Yeah.
I feel strongly we're independent. We have integrity. And I think about that all the time, but also we have to have a succession plan. And that's not to say Robert's going anywhere. Robert is probably enjoying it now more than he's enjoyed it forever, perhaps because we've reached that inflection point and we get some great gigs, right? Mm. And so from our perspective, one of the questions that's come through a lot recently is, well, how does this go on? A lot of people noticed Robert had a fairly big birthday in March, sort of bus pass type birthday. And I hope he's not watching. And people say, well, how does this move forward? And that was always in our minds. And what do you want to do, Robert? Do you one day want to retire, or do you see yourself as the Attenborough of electric vehicles, maybe donned in a safari suit in 20 years' time? And the reality is that, you know, from his perspective, I think he has got the energy for it and wants to continue to do it. And that's great. But what happened in the last year was crazy, because suddenly we were like, okay, we now can't really travel. So you, almost all the content of the last year has been in the Cotswolds or China. That was obviously not the plan.
Yeah.
The majority of the content of last year has been cars. And I've said many, many times publicly, it's a clean energy and cars and other vehicles channel. But cars have been easy to film in the last year. Going to buildings, traveling has not been easy. And one of the other things that we did when I first started was I said to Robert, look, you know, I know you're environmental with a small e, and I'm probably environmental with a big e, but you probably can't fly as much as you're going to do if you're going to be taken seriously as a channel. So there were a lot of things going on there, and we basically agreed that actually having Robert as the quarterback, the Ron Burgundy of electric vehicles, you know, handing over to other people around the world would be great, not least because the energy transition is global. Mm. It's hard to ignore California. It's hard to ignore Norway. It's hard to ignore China, Korea. So we now have, I think it's about 12 presenters, actually. That's four or five of them have yet to appear.
Wow.
Because of the pandemic. But we have two in America. We have one in Norway, one in the Netherlands. We've got four or five back here in Blighty. We've got one in China, and we've also just agreed to have someone in Seoul in Korea as well. So, and you can see where we're going with that, you know.
There's a little bit of exclusive for us. And also, Martin, it was 23:14, that clip of Robert's age, that we need to send on Twitter to Robert.
There you go. Timestamp. It's in.
And we've got also one last thing while I'm on the subject of presenters as well. We've had some, you know, incredibly talented presenters, you know. Johnny, superbly talented, you know, Helen, superbly talented, Maddie's fantastic, etc. But we're just about to add a new one in the UK as well, who's a car specialist, because I think, you know, Robert is a good car reviewer, but reviews a car in a different way probably than the most car reviewers. And we want someone who can tell the story rather than just talk about the stats. So we've got someone new coming in the summer as well. So as of July, there'll be a new kind of main car presenter in the UK to do that as well. So we're really excited. So we've been busy over the last year, but not maybe in the way we thought we would be 12 months ago.
So you brought something which is obviously you've been doing cars because they're easy to do at the moment. So are we going to start seeing more solar buildings, more renewable stuff this year on Fully Charged than we have in the last 12 months?
Yeah, we're working currently on a number of different projects of that type. Robert, one of the most popular episodes of the last year or two has been Robert's Powerwall. People love that sort of stuff. Same at the live shows, And all the surveys we do of our audience, they're all super keen on not just switching, but also working out how they can generate their own power, their own heat. Actually, I don't want to speak too soon, but I think the revolution towards electric vehicles is it's happening. I also think that the change from fossil fuel-based power to clean power is happening. And I think a lot of people are looking at their houses now but don't know where to begin. So we're just start filming a fully charged home series next week. And we will be putting that out probably in the summer as well. So that's my background. So I'm so excited that we're getting to do that. But yeah, you'll see more home-related stuff. And hopefully as we can film and we can get out and about again, more interesting kind of renewables type projects. I noticed that Gravitricity, that great gravity battery, is being trialed in Edinburgh this week. And we would have been up there in ordinary circumstances. So we can't wait to get back into that, which is not to say we're going to ditch cars. Cars are a key part of what we do. Cars are the hero of the energy transition. You probably heard me say that before. You know, they're the things that get people excited about all the other stuff.
They're a great gateway into a clean energy. They get most people who get electric cars who have got no interest in green tech suddenly get solar panels after they've had an EV. It's really odd.
It's a phenomenon, and we love that, and we work on the other way as well. Lots of people who had solar panels then move into to EVs, and you know, from our perspective, you suddenly look at energy in a different way. It's not analog anymore; it's digital. You can see it right there: how much you're consuming, what are you consuming, when are you consuming it, and it totally transforms people. So, I'm a clean energy evangelist, I think, in many respects, and so I see that as once they've got the EV, right? Okay, what other things can they do? And I think, generally speaking, you know, a year on, people are really open-minded maybe it's the gas boiler the right thing for me to be using. That's a question I get asked daily now, whereas before that was the gas boiler was going to be here till the end of time. But you know, things are changing.
It's quite hard with home stuff because a lot of it is long-term. Like, our boiler is fine, but our hob is really old now. So, I was like, okay, so that needs to go electric. So I was looking at the induction hobs, and they all say, like, 32 amp. And having, when you've had a car installer, a car charger installed, you're like, okay, well, that's 32 amp, and that needed a new cable being run, and, you know, the government paid for a bit of it, but it was still expensive. And you're like, I'm not normal. Most people would go, well, I can get another 150 quid gas hob, and the installer pops it in, and that's done. I'd like to go electric, and I'm who's super deep in this world, is like, oh, I'll call the electrician, and what's it going to cost? For most people, we need to make it easier. Let's get on to policy. You've worked in this area before. You're an expert in this area. I just got my Green Homes grant voucher through. So I just about got in on the last day of it. So I'm going solar hot water. That was a shambles, wasn't it? How do you feel at the minute about, let's talk about UK. It's where we are. How do we create good policy that makes it easy and isn't just this mess of, we're spending all this money, 6 months later, we got it wrong, so we'll put it somewhere else. Have some loft insulation. How should government do this?
Well, you've touched on the subject, which I probably have more opinions on than anything else, unfortunately for you. But I mean, the short answer, I mean, this home series we're doing at the moment is six parts, and it starts with energy efficiency and goes right through to heat pumps and other heat, that covers off, as I say, energy efficiency, cheaper measures, because in the world at the moment it's all expensive electric vehicles, expensive stuff. So we want to go through cheaper measures. Talks about, you know, hot water, all those things. So we're really looking forward to doing that. But in terms of UK policy, I was very close to the renewable heat incentive in the UK. I was relatively close to the Green Deal, if you can remember back a few years. And they're not so very different to what's just happened with the Green Homes grant. And it's really tricky, and I'm going to try and summarize this quickly so as not to kind of bore you, but government don't understand it. They're generalists. Politicians are generalists. And for the same token, quite often civil servants do understand it, but quite a lot of them are generalists as well. And typically they would a horse designed by a committee is a camel. So they would sit around, they probably have some quite good ideas, actually, and then they probably talk themselves out of it as it's too difficult. On the other end, you get someone like Elon Musk, who just comes along, does what he wants, and there are fans of him, and he has his detractors too, but he has that singular vision. And the UK kind of needs to pick a vision and stick with it. That's what I would say for one. But the key problem is obviously this technology is expensive. When it comes to heat, you know, there's going to be a bit of a fight going on between hydrogen and heat pumps at the moment, but it's absolutely reminiscent of what's happened in the car industry. And our belief is that heat pumps, because of their coefficient of performance is 3 times better than a boiler, will ultimately win. But heat pumps are expensive. So in our series, we're going to cover heat pumps. We're also going to cover other electrification of heat options as well. But the key thing, Martin, to your question is probably we need heat as a service, i.e. you don't pay for it all in one go. Otherwise, it's not gonna happen. And the reality is that often when you replace your heating system, for example, or things like that, when they break down, right, you don't go out looking to change it. So you need to get into people's minds, and it will take a little bit of time for people to cross the Rubicon. I remember when I got my first EV 6 years ago, it took me 2 years to go, actually, I think this is what I definitely can do this. And that was a while ago, so I was a relatively early adopter. And probably there wasn't much charging then, less choice in cars. But for a lot of people, it will take a year or two, maybe 3 years, 4 years, for them to get the courage to go, actually, I think I can go without a boiler. I think I can change my gas hob to electric. And then another big problem is, how do you train up all those installers? Well, you've got to show them that there's a business. Actually, the Green Homes Grant did almost exactly what the Green Deal did. It failed, but not through lack of interest from consumers, ironically.
Why did it fail?
Because I don't think they had a real interest in making it work, if I can be slightly political. I don't think they really, really wanted to make it work. And you know, you have to, you know, if the leads are there, then it should work, right? That's the way that's the hardest thing to do in business, is to create demand. If you've got demand and you still fail, I would question the, you know, how joined up it all was. And there was quite a few years ago with the Renewable Heat Incentive and the Green Deal, I'll move off this quickly. A lot of installers got really excited about that, and they trained and they did their MCS accreditation, and then they got burnt. And they're probably sat there now going, isn't this the same thing happening again? So until you can show them real demand from consumers, it will be just a brave few. And we've got some brilliant installing companies that come to Fully Charged Live and have been on the channel, who are incredibly, you've got to salute them. They've been incredibly brave. They're pioneering. They still do it. They're reaping the rewards. But for others who are used to just doing boilers, and I've done boilers for 20 years, and you know, it is a really big stretch. So it's fundamentally, it's a difficult thing, but I think we can get there. But first of all, we've got to make it easy. At the moment, if you ask a consumer, they go, well, I don't know where to begin, right? That's what the average person would say. Where do I begin? I mean, you're passionate, and even for you, it's not been straightforward.
No.
What do you think would increase adoption then? Do you think if they did government-backed loans, 0% loans, or do you think it's just a lack of education out there that's helping people?
Well, you don't need it. It's like the EV market, isn't it? You don't need it to go to 100% immediately. You just need to chip off the first percent, then the second percent, then 4%, 8%, and so on. So they just need to, and there are people out there who want it. You know, that's the truth. You know, people who can afford it. We're still in that early adopter territory where there are people who will pay a bit more for it. But I think the reality is that it's got to be much, much simpler. And yeah, got to be more joined up. And as I say, I think that ultimately, if you have a singular vision, and if someone at governmental level knew exactly how the industry works, I think they could make it happen. But it tends to be politicians who are, you know, and I'm not actually being needlessly critical of politicians, but it's the way the system's set up, isn't it? They change every 5 years. And quite often, actually, if you've got a brief as a politician, you know, you run a department, you might only have that for a year and a half. You know, there's no real long-term thinking. So in a lot of countries, it's really out of the hands of the shorter-term politicians, and it's really industry that actually runs and makes the changes.
And the public servants are often in, you know, those positions for many years. So it's also their job to get it right. So our electrician we straddled COVID. So he bought the new Zappy 2 from My Energy, because I wanted that one. Pre-COVID, then it hit, and actually we were waiting for our either electricity company or it wouldn't be them, it'd be the was it the DNO it's called, to confirm that my house was 100 amp fuse, but they couldn't send someone out because of COVID. So my electrician for 3 months had a charger sitting in his, had many chargers. He did a lot of, he does a lot of EV installs in his spare bedroom. And so he's out of pocket. And then when he finally installed it, and I was like, what do I need to do for the grant? He's like, nothing, I sort it all. And he told me how many were outstanding. Now he's lucky because he gets word of mouth. Loads of people around here have got EVs. So he's put loads in. But it was just taking forever for him to, it was months to do that. Now his business, sole trader, he absorbed it. Yeah. But again, I heard that story and I'm like, it doesn't need to take 6 months to get some money back from the government. If you've installed it, you've sent the pictures off. That kind of thing dissuades people from these projects.
Yeah, so what's happening now, and you could see it more and more as you can look at institutional money is now filtering into clean energy, for example. There's obviously been a ton of institutional money has gone into, you know, solar farms, into wind turbines, even into energy storage. And homes has been the Cinderella subject. It's been the last subject really to be tackled. But there is a lot of money to be made. So I'm not a huge fan of capitalism in its current form, but ultimately it probably will do its job when people realize that homes are a huge opportunity. And when investors come in, they will be able to effectively loan the homeowner money to make that sort of stuff happen. And they will be very interested in making it work, in making it streamlined, because they're commercial entities. So we will get there, but no, it's incredibly complicated. With the Green Deal, so that would must have been in our thinking about 2012, they spent quite a lot of money marketing that. They had a lot of interest, but they made it inordinately complicated. So that by the time, you know, if you're familiar with sales funnels, by the time they got people in the funnel to the time they got them to the end of the process, most people had left because they were just so fed up. So that just doesn't work. So we will get there, I'm confident. Market drivers, all those things will start to kick in. But for me, it's such an exciting area, but a lot of people don't get excited about it, which is the great thing about electric cars, because then you could say, right, okay, well, you've got an electric car, so have you thought about the other stuff in your life, how you're consuming energy elsewhere? And it really is a great opportunity to start tagging those conversations onto the back of their first EV purchase.
So let's get some quick fire questions from me and Martin on some fully charged facts that some super fans may want to know. What's the funniest thing that's ever happened behind the stage with you, Robert, or anyone else that you know behind the scenes?
Oh my God, it is absolutely hilarious working with Robert. There's no question about it. There's always something that goes on. I'm just trying to think of one that's not maybe a bit rude. a bit pad desperately. I mean, I think it is funny just to be around him. When we first went to Fully Charged, he's so polite as well, though. He's polite but sweary, I would say. Polite but potty mouth.
Perfect.
It's a good combination. But we went to Fully Charged Live, and he was too polite, really, to tell a lot of people who were asking for selfies and things that he needed to go to the toilet. So he made it to the toilet. That's not where the story is going. But it took him far longer than it should have done to say, excuse me, can I just go to the toilet? But, you know, it is... We're very, very lucky. It's a great team. It is a laugh. But, you know, I'm not saying, you know, it has been a tightrope. YouTube channels, you know, podcasts, YouTube channels, those things, amazing thing to do, amazing thing to be part of. But it is brutally hard work. So we do have a lot of fun, and there are lots of things, but some of them probably best not for this broadcast.
Well, you smashed through 750,000 subs, heading towards 1 million. Where are your audience? Who's watching?
It's about 30% in the UK at the moment. It's 25% in North America, 25% in the rest of Europe, apart from the UK, and about 20% rest of the world, with things like Australia and India being particularly strong. It does vary. If we do lots of American content, which we've not been able to do so much last year, it changes. It kind of morphs, and people are obviously interested to watch stuff in their own countries. So that's where we are. I think we've probably shared some stats on Twitter, Nick, about how male or female our audience are. And again, it's probably no surprise to say ours is something like 96-95% male. And we're trying to work on that. But it's quite hard, I think, because of the topic, which is a real shame, I think. So we are trying hard to change it. But Nick, what you've got couple more percent female watchers, I think, than we had.
Yeah, I'm usually about a percent and a half more than you.
not this competitive.
Yeah, it's not, I'm not too competitive. I think I'm about that. I'm the highest I've ever been at the moment. Lockdown actually brought it up, so I think I'm about 7% female audience at the moment, which is the highest I've ever been.
Okay, I'm really jealous now. But so yeah, so then the age range. I'm 45, and our average audience viewer is probably a couple of years younger than me, basically. So we, you know, and it varies. We've got lots of people watching who are much younger, and people who watch older as well. But how we get beyond YouTube, we're never going to leave YouTube. We're trapped forever. Mm. But how we get beyond that, and how we broadcast on other platforms, is very much front of mind for us as well. You know, we need to do that, because not everyone watches YouTube at the end of the day.
What? That's,
yeah, amazingly, not so. There are other ways to do that. So yeah, we're working behind the scenes on that sort of thing as well.
Okay. Now I do want to get through some viewer questions, and I've not been following them. Nick, have you put many up? Because I've not been looking at my other screens.
A couple of people have actually asked questions that we've already asked, and then we got round to them. A lot of admiration for the show. Someone actually made a comment I put on the screen before, which is, you know, the Fully Charged is one of the most independent shows they've ever seen on TV. And then someone said, yes, I saw the Skoda review very recently. So yeah, no one's questioning the independency there. Someone said, "Are you going to cover the Ripple Energy?" Unfortunately, Craig, me and Martin have already signed off with Sarah. Yeah, got the hard
hat. We beat you to that one.
We love them. I mean, I was in London yesterday, first time in 14 months that I got to meet with Octopus and Arrival and Ripple. My Energy, GridServe, I could go on, and I'm going to get people criticizing me for not mentioning people, but I think actually I really could say negative things about the country. But in terms of energy and entrepreneurialism and all these startups, I think we've got some absolutely incredible companies. So Ripple, yes, I think we've done a podcast with Sarah. I don't know, maybe not, but we certainly, she's absolutely on our list. I think she's avoiding us. I think she said she wanted to do you first, so I don't know. But no, we love Ripple Energy. What a great idea it is.
So question come in there. Question for Dan. How often can you get through a shoot without going off tangent and cursing like a trooper?
Yeah, I mean, we're shooting tomorrow, actually. Robert is unbelievable. He would say this, because it's a phrase he uses a lot. He could talk under wet cement. So he will talk, but he's, you know, he's so sort of articulate. But yeah, he is a bit of a, you know, there can be the odd expletive, but we do have a, you know, it is hilarious. He's just irreplaceable. You know, I'd say Robert's such a great person to have on the channel. I think by one of the things I've said earlier was that obviously the pandemic has changed what we've done, and I've got to pay testament to him, because we got to this point last year and the plan was that Robert would do, so we do 104 episodes a year, 2 a week, 52 podcasts a year, plus now we're building out the Fully Charged Plus channel as well. So you're talking about at least 200 pieces of content a year. And last year the plan was that Robert would maybe do only 50 episodes. And because of COVID, he had to do about 90. So you've got to take your hat off to his work ethic. But even he's like, I quite like someone else to come in and do the car reviews now, please.
Yeah, the car reviews are tough to, you know, because it's not, yeah, people watch a 20-minute video. It's not a 20-minute chunk out of your life. There's a lot, especially if you've got to travel as well, there's a huge amount of work involved in reviewing a car. Fully Charged Outside, so you're talking about the big show, not Fully Charged Cities, but the big outdoor show at the end of the year. Yeah, so how is it coming along? So tickets are rolling in, and you know,
yeah, it's good. I mean obviously from our point of view, I think probably pessimistic in terms of running it indoors. I felt that even late last year that wasn't going to happen. I was really saddened by the second wave, obviously, of COVID that the country experienced, but not entirely surprised. So from our perspective, we didn't think in June or even in September that indoors was going to be a real possibility. So we said from the outset, we'll reformat the show, we'll run it outside. Ticket sales have picked up massively. Now people are out and about again. People are getting vaccinated. By the time September 3rd, 4th, or 5th comes around, a lot of the population will have had two vaccinations. It's really all about the variants, isn't it? I mean, it's an open secret. It's really about what happens with that. But from our standpoint, we're very confident that because it's outside, because we'll have all the COVID measures in place, that will happen. And we have about 150 exhibitors, probably about 25 to 30 of the car companies there, thousands of test drives. It's looking good. But, you know, we all keep our fingers crossed because, let's be honest, it is a strange time. But from our perspective, we cannot wait to do it. And it will feel a bit different because we'll be doing the theatres outside. But actually, maybe that's no bad thing as long as the weather behaves itself.
So we're back about the weather. Obviously, it's Britain. it's likely going to rain at least one of the days. Is there going to be covers on the walkways between where the exhibitors are? Is there going to be shelters? How's that going to work exactly?
Yeah, we're working with a contractor that does kind of the big outdoor shows, basically. So everything will be, there's lots of sort of marquee type structures and those kind of things you might see at Goodwood if you've ever been there. Those kind of slightly marquee doesn't quite cover it, I think. You know, those types of structures to provide cover. Then we may well be doing fully charged ponchos as well, Nick, as a bit of a side hustle. But from our perspective, yeah, we will be providing as much cover as we can.
I can see the merch now: fully charged brollies, ponchos, hats with little umbrellas on.
Stop burning stuff, masks, you know, all sorts of stuff. So, I mean, yeah, from my perspective, we obviously have to pray on the weather, but I think the UK has become a bit more resilient to being about outside. That picture of people having that meal in the snow in Cranley.
Yeah, don't care what the weather does. I just miss other humans now. So it's this weird year where working from home was fine. I've looked at nothing else but these four walls for a year. And then, you know, we've got a little fella, so it's great because he not even a nursery yet. So I got to spend a ton of time that I wouldn't have done as a dad. So silver linings, but a year later, man, I miss human beings. Like, well, I just can't.
I mean, let's be honest. We only have to look at the pubs. I mean, people are sitting out there in the pubs at night up to, you know, closing hours, no matter how cold it is, no matter how rainy it is. I mean, to go back to fully charged, I mean, for me, it's a social event. Every year we've gone, I've had one of the greatest times ever. I've never seen the whole show. The first show, you know, it was smaller than the second show and I never got around everywhere. The second show was so big, I'm sure I didn't see one part of the building because I didn't go, just didn't have to, because it's such a large show. And I mean, I was there all for the full 3 days and I never left. I was there till, you know, morning till night. And it's just such a, there's so many people to talk to, so many like-minded people. The talks are just amazing. You know, so, some of the people, some of the guests you get, some of the talks you have. So excited.
And we can't wait to do it again. And it will be, you know, fully COVID safe. It'll be outside. I think people, as I say, people are a bit more resilient about the weather now. We just cannot wait to get back and to see everyone and to deliver that. And what's more, that intervening 18 months, or what would have been 15 months by the time the second show comes around, a whole lot more people are interested in electric vehicles and clean energy now than they were before. So it's really, we're pretty confident really that it's going to be quite something. And we can't wait.
What are the really big videos you've done in the last year? I'm thinking, when was Arrival? I remember I looked recently at that one and that had just had a ridiculous amount of views.
Yeah, that was great. We were so excited to do that and we're going back next week.
Are you?
Yeah, we're going back next week. So, you know, we covered the van, obviously. Covered the van then, and since then they've done the bus. They've got quite an interesting car they're involved with as well. I don't know if you know about that.
Can you hurry up and do that video soon? Because I've bought quite a lot of Arrival shares.
Oh, no. Nick and his shares. All he talks about is he's got some not dodgy, but he's got some referral code.
Yeah, it's a good one. Neither Robert and I invest. And we make that a point of not investing. Probably because A, we'd be crap at it. But B, because it's not appropriate for us, I think. But I had someone I know who invested in Arrival, and they said to me, they said, is it real? Because there's a lot of that, right? That if you're familiar with the parlous tale of Nikola Motors, there's lots of reverse mergers and SPACs and lots of Ponzi schemes and companies taking in money and the rest of it. But I was at Arrival yesterday. It is real. I'm going back next week for the filming, and that's one of the British firms that is really super exciting. So we're looking forward to doing that. So that was very popular. And then, I think it's probably only fair to say so. The interest in the Chinese episodes has been huge.
Yeah.
Huge, and bigger than we probably
anticipated. You had your Chinese correspondent at the motor show the other day, didn't you? The Chinese motor show. Did he film anything of the lady jumping on the Tesla?
I don't know if he got that. He certainly got a few episodes worth there. Tomorrow we've got an episode coming out from him. He went back to Shenzhen where he saw 16,000 buses. I don't know if you saw that episode. He went back to Shenzhen and visited BYD, Build Your Dreams, and he looked inside their factory. That comes out tomorrow. We've got someone in Korea now. It wasn't meant to just be China. It was meant to be Korea and Japan as well. But obviously, Elliot's kind of stuck in China only. But it's a very, very, very nuanced subject, the subject of China. I'm well aware of that. We talk about it often internally. But when you have a channel which is dedicated to the energy transition, the move away from fossil fuels to clean energy, not covering Asia is almost impossible.
Yeah, so, I mean, you have to make these decisions. Like one of the more recent podcasts on the Fully Charged Plus channel was you're filming in Milton Keynes already. So Robert popped into BP Pulse, sat outside in the gardens and talked through what is the strategy of an oil company moving into energy. And he didn't shy away from it, but equally, he didn't labor it. He was just like, well, you and Shell are making the big moves, but you're making your money from oil, but we can see where you're heading. And it was a positive, constructive conversation without pretending that, where Chargemaster came from. It's a very different beast now being owned by, an oil company. What are some of the more exciting things you see happening over the next couple of years? You've covered things like GridServe, which was an amazing coverage you did of that. I got that one really wrong. Because I was being pitched GridServe by the PR company for ages. Yeah. And I was like, can you just send me a picture of like how the site's coming along? Like, I'd love to see it. Or they're like, no, we can't send you anything. And I'm like, well, they've said they're going to build like 100 sites.
Yeah.
Like, run the maths on that. It's massively capital intensive, as much money as Hitachi's got. You're full of BS. Like, this is all fake. Just send me a picture. And they're like, we can't. And so I'm so pleased you got, and I got that. I've apologized so many times. I got it wrong. GridServe has done an amazing, amazing job. And you really supported. That was a great video. The Rivian stuff you've done. Yeah. Again, a lot of these startups have got nothing to show at the time, but you back them and they do come through.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, we want people to succeed, and that goes from the establishment players to the newer players as well. There's obviously something particularly shiny about going to Rivian or Arrival or GridServe and those types of companies. And we'll clearly continue to follow those. But we're quite excited by what VW are trying to do, which is turn that huge business into an electric vehicle business. I think that's exciting as well. And BP, it's really interesting. They are investing. Some would say not enough, but when they've got good clean energy stories to put forward, we like to cover that. There are others that are laggards, right? We don't cover them very often. Thinking about, let's say, about Exxon, you don't hear much about what they're doing. So, I mean, from our perspective, if people are trying, that's fantastic. You'll never see someone selling gas boilers though at Fully Charged Live or selling petrol or anything like that. We make sure that stuff doesn't, they can only come and present the stuff that we kind of support. But there's so much exciting stuff. We're really excited about Korea. We think Hyundai and Kia are going to do incredible things. We think they've really hit their stride. The China story is unfolding in the most incredible way. And we do think that the cheaper, affordable EVs from players like XPeng could have quite a big ripple effect in Europe. In Europe, we're obviously fascinated by Norway, but that's starting to ripple outwards now into the Netherlands, into Germany. I mean, Germany, what a fascinating country. So steeped in industrialization based on fossil fuels, and now they've got the Tesla factory being built near Berlin, and their car companies are trying to, you know, reinvent themselves. And then in the UK, we're very fortunate. Lots going on there. We definitely want to do more in Scotland. We mentioned BrewDog, I think, before this podcast began. That's an interesting topic we'd like to cover. And then North America, there's tons going on. We'd definitely go back to Rivian in a big way. We've got some plans with them. And then we're really keen. We are eyeing up the solar farms in Morocco. And we're eyeing up the fact of going and talking about solar panels in off-grid in Africa. And we're thinking about going to see the Tata Nexon in India and things like that. So we're sort of chomping at the leash, if you like, to try and get out and tell those stories. But, I mean, what an incredible time. The energy transition is one of the few things that you can get really, really optimistic about. Man's ingenuity, you know, it's obviously terrible that we're in the situation we are with air pollution and climate, but man's ingenuity, when we really put our minds to it, can be quite something. We just need to go faster.
So one final question for me, Dan. Big question. You talk about, you know, selling things and obviously not selling gas boilers. The big question everyone wants to know about the Fully Charged Live Show this year is, will you be selling vegan food this year?
Yes, yeah, there'll be vegan food there. And it was funny, we went to Silverstone. We said, by the way, our audience all love electric vehicles. Ergo, they're a large percentage, larger than any percentage you've ever had at any event, are going to want vegan and vegetarian food. And of course, you know, Silverstone probably more akin to like red-blooded motorsports. Probably hadn't heard that before, didn't believe us, and then probably ran out after about an hour and a half. So we've run that home to Farnborough, and it's interesting how those topics are now becoming something people want to talk about as well. And, you know, hopefully over time we can, you know, we've done episodes on things like that. Hopefully we can start to talk about that sort of stuff, and some of the more future gazing stuff like Tomorrow's World would do as well. But yeah, don't judge us over the last year. I actually think we've done a lot, but a lot of it's been behind the scenes. We've just tried to keep the episodes ticking out, but actually we've got a lot more to come. I think we've used last year pretty well, but you'll be the judge of that, not us.
Yeah, well, it's a big thing that people don't realize when they're talking about reducing carbon, that I'm a meat eater, but I eat more vegan food because I know it's lower carbon. So I try and eat less meat. I still eat meat, and you never stop me, but I try and consume less because it is better for the environment. Yeah. Any final thoughts off you, Martin?
I think that's that we've hit our hour and we've taken up a lot of Dan's time, and maybe Dan is now the not so secret CEO, co-CEO of a Fully Charged. And he did tell us that he's got his new microphone because he might be doing a little bit more. So maybe it's not the last time you've seen him on screen. Or his voice on a podcast or something.
Who knows? Thanks, guys. It was a real pleasure to see you. Thank you.
It was a pleasure to have you.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for everyone watching. Thank you for your comments. There's been so much that we haven't had a chance to get to. I can't imagine anyone watching isn't subscribed to Fully Charged, but if you're the one, make sure you go and subscribe. Check out the Patreon page and also their join option on YouTube to support that channel. And we'll all see you later in the year when we catch up in person with real human beings. It's been lovely to chat, Dan. Hey, thank you. Thank you so much. And we'll talk again soon. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
If you ever have any suggestions, by the way, of somebody that you think I should talk to on a Saturday special, just ping me a note. Email is hello@evnewsdaily.com. Love to hear from you, and I'll chase them up if you think I should get somebody on the podcast who'll be as fascinating as Dan. A little mention for question of the week with emobilitynorway.com. Would you buy a Chinese-made EV? Reading out your answers on the Sunday show. And thank you, as always, to our premium partners on Patreon. Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, NationalCarCharging.com and AlohaCharge.com, Derek Riley from the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel, Richard at RSEV.co.uk for buying and selling EVs in the UK, and, of course, emobilitynorway.com. Have a good and see you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.